Welcome back to Shattering Mess. It's now time to turn the page, but before we do, I heard, I forgot what idiot politician it was in the United States saying, you know, we've got to figure out a better way to deal with ISIS. And my idea is that we need to recruit Sunni tribesmen. Hey, Kirk.
ISIS is Sunni.
What is the basis of ISIS?
Sunni against Shia.
Yeah, Sunni tribesmen. So if you're a Sunni and you want to join the United States in opposing the Islamic State of Sunni tribesmen, who are you going to ally with?
Well, you would probably ally with the Sunnis if you.
Well, how could you ally with the Sunnis? You are a Sunni, but you want to fight the Sunni tribesmen of the Islamic State. How could you ally with the Sunnis?
Not going to happen, but I'll take your guns anyway.
Okay, well, yeah, so I can align myself with the Islamic State. Because would there be any Shia Muslim that would say, hey, you know, join us. We're also fighting the Islamic State. We'll welcome you.
Not a chance.
Not a chance.
If they could agree, they wouldn't be fighting.
Yeah, this is like saying, you know, I think I'm going to do is we need to oppose Nazism. So what I want to do is let's go and recruit and arm the Hitler Youth.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or anybody with a brown shirt. Let's do this.
Yeah, anyone with... Oh, my God. You know, we've got to be the dumbest nation on earth.
We're beyond dumb. I'm totally beyond dumb. We just lost it completely.
Well, let's see if we can make some sense here out of, you know, because I don't claim to be the smartest guy in the world. I know you don't claim to be the smartest guy in the world.
No, but I can
and
see that.
We do know that Yahweh is the smartest guy in the world. And so, you know, it should be a real challenge for us to figure out what he had to say. I personally don't find it to be all that difficult, but let's see what we can do here. He wrote us this the most famous of all Psalms, 23rd.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't think there's any question that there is that if you were to ask people to recite something from the what they would call the Old Testament, that 99.9% of people would quote the 23rd Psalm.
I'm sure they would. I'm absolutely sure.
Yeah. They'd misquote it, of course. The first thing they would do is they would replace Yahweh's name, which is how it begins with the Lord, even though the Lord wasn't written in the psalm.
Uh-uh.
It says a song of Dod. They would call him David, but David requires that there be a V in Hebrew, doesn't it?
That would. It would require that, yes.
You've been studying Hebrew based upon its alphabet. Uh-huh. Did you find a V?
Can't find one. Of course, I'm slow.
So, yeah, okay, well,
so far, no. 7 years of
among
no,
the 20,
no V.
Okay, among the 22 letters in Hebrew, there was no V. No. Okay, so a song of Dod, whose name means beloved, Yahweh is my shepherd. Ra'ah, which we consider, which means that he's observant, he guides, he nurtures, he tends to, he protects. It's from the verb ra'ah, which means to see, to witness, to understand by paying attention to what you see from the proper perspective, through perspective, through observation.
Right.
And it says, I shall not be diminished, which means if Yahweh is your shepherd, the consequence of living one's life estranged from him, apart from the covenant, which is to have your soul diminished to nothingness, which I think is probably 99.999% of people on the planet today.
Probably.
You're going to avoid that.
Mm-hmm. Conversely,
says, in it,
no, I was going to say conversely, that would be that the opposite. You don't stand in neutral. Therefore, you have to be increased. If you're part of his family, then you exponentially are increased.
Well, you know, you're familiar with the concept of Hebrew poetry. It's not based on rhythm and rhyme. You know the nature of Hebrew. It has a very unusual characteristic. And as a lyric to a song, because this is a mizmor, a song, a lyric set to melody, Hebrew poetry is always based on parallel construction. In other words, it says the same thing. Reinforce it, makes a statement, then it reinforces that statement by saying the same thing from a slightly different perspective.
And that's what
so it's an intellectual form of poetry where the poetry is based upon observing the same thing from a slightly different perspective or using different words to describe the same thing. So what you said is that you can't be a neutral. If you're not going to be diminished, then we would expect the poetry to explain how you're going to be increased or what you're going to do, what's going to be the consequence, the alternative of not being diminished. That would be the next statement. Okay. So it says in an abode. So the antithesis of being diminished is to live in a residence, a home. So in an abode.
Right.
A Nawa. N-W-H. Is there anything about Nawa that would describe to you an abode for living?
Well, it's also called a place of beauty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I discovered from researching, it also is sometimes called a place to roam,
mm-hmm.
Which I thought was very apt, very appropriate to our discussion. Because
yep, absolutely. And
we'll exploring the universe, yeah.
Yeah, how about in the WH as it relates to a home for the living?
Well, you're talking about like the letters?
Yeah, the letters.
Oh, sure. You've got the nun, which is a inheritance, and that's mm-hmm. part of your home. You're an inheritance.
A child born with an inheritance via the picture of a sperm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then, if we have wah, that's increasing, and that on many, many levels that would apply, whether increasing the home with more people or increasing yourself, your abilities,
right.
your spirit, and so forth, as well as increasing the universe and places to go and see and do.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, the wah, and we don't give it enough credit for this. We always turn to the tenpag, which means to increase and secure a home. That was the purpose of a tenpag.
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't give a lot of credit to is the wah is the most common word by a huge factor in the Torah and Prophets and Psalms.
Yeah, but you're
it is a conjunction.
Yeah.
Right, it is a conjunction. What the law does is it says, this is added to that. This is connected to that. This is associated with that. That you go beyond this and you add that. It's the thing that makes the connections that lead to increased knowledge, increased benefits. It's the law speaks of adding to increase. So wouldn't the law be the natural antithesis
of
being diminished?
Oh yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's an unending, undiminished home for children born with an inheritance, and then the hay is the last letter.
Hay is who is this happening to? Well, obviously,
yeah.
People who are standing up, engaged, and beholding Yahweh, and they recognize
right.
who He is, and want to be part of the family. Certainly.
Exactly. Yeah. In fact, a hay at the end of a word typically makes that word feminine, and so in the Yahweh's case, he has two hays. The hay in the middle would represent a masculine individual who is standing up, reaching up, paying attention to what God says, walking with Him. Gee, who might that be? Who do we know who walked away from his country and walked with Yahweh to the promised land and engaged with him, paid attention to him, answered his invitation, and came to embrace the covenant? Who is the first character that's spoken of at length in the Torah?
I would guess it was Abraham.
Oh, yeah, Abraham. Does Abraham have a name that would kind of lead us to his importance in this whole thing? What is Abraham mean?
Father, merciful father.
Right.
Father with mercy.
Yeah, in fact, Raham can be merciful father, mm-hmm. or Raham can be enriching father.
Enriching father, yes.
Yeah, what's the antithesis of being diminished? If you're if you have a diminished amount of currency in your wallet, would you prefer to be enriched?
I think so.
Yeah, enriching father. Yeah, so he's the he would be the hay in the middle of a name, and the hay at the end of the name speaks of Sarah. Now we know that Abraham is a prototype, a model for us, a symbolica of our Heavenly Father.
Mm-hmm.
So who would Sarah, the feminine aspect of Yahweh's nature, and the feminine component of the covenant family?
The Ruach Kodesh.
Right.
Spiritual mother.
Yeah, you got
it. Aspects of God and mothers. Yeah. And that aspect, yes.
Right, so Nahua is we're getting the enrichment, the enlargement, the addition, the increase for the children with an inheritance from our spiritual mother.
Yes.
Yeah. So in an abode that is conducive to growing and to spreading out and to shooting forth, this is Dashe. And we were working on Dashe yesterday because it's a word that Yahweh uses in context that make it impossible to simply to render anointed, and yet it's mostly translated anointed. You know, anoints, and there really is a Hebrew word for to convey the concept of anoint. And the concept of anoint, if I were to take it out of religious speak, it is to set apart and to prepare for service. And it's used of Yosha twice in Daniel, where it's an adjective modifying the messenger. The messenger is the noun. Masiach modifies the messenger to say that the messenger is being set apart and prepared to serve as a messenger. So if Yahweh wanted to convey anoint in this context, wouldn't he have used Masiach?
Well, it would have made a little more sense if that was the total thing you're trying to say, sure.
So we're trying to figure out, okay, what does Dashe mean? And the basis of it, we see all over the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and as Dashe, it is used synonymously with Torah. Well, that's a pretty good clue. So if you're going to have a word that is used synonymously with Torah, and particularly with Choke and Mizpat, as they're associated with Torah, Mizpat is the means in the Torah that Yahweh uses to resolve disputes, and the Choke are the inscribed instructions that we find inside of the Torah that cut us into the covenant relationship. So under that basis, Dashe can't simply mean to anoint or to grow green or to be green or to sprout. It's got to have some other connotation too, doesn't it? It's got to convey the idea of Yahweh's instructions, his guidance, to be synonymous with those other concepts.
Right.
So, Kirk, as we try to understand the meaning of Dashe, here's the things that I was able to deduce just by looking up the word.
Okay.
That it conveys to flourish as it relates to growing. You know, flourishing is abundance in growth, thriving. So, again, growing, you know, I love gardening. I'm pretty good at gardening. When a plant thrives and flourishes, then that plant is growing in a very healthy way. It speaks of sprouting new life and shooting forth life. It also is associated with olive oil, being covered in olive oil, which is a metaphor for the set apart spirit's ability to enlighten us, to heal us, to envelop us, to nourish us. And Dashe is often used as something that is done in preparation for a festival feast, which would be Pesach, Matzah, Bekodim, Shavua.
You're stealing all my good lines there. That's exactly what I looked up and all the different ones and they came from. And of course, I don't always use all the same sources as you do, but no matter where you go, it still comes for cleansing for a festival feast, and healing with olive oil and growth.
Olive oil is, on four of these festival feasts, we're asked to come into the presence of the light of our spiritual mother.
Right.
So that makes perfect sense so far, doesn't it? And she's the one that prepares us. She cleanses us in the sense of we're covered in her light, which her dispels light. All of the darkness in us.
Yeah. So
olive oil, of course, was the purest form of light in the ancient world, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So I looked up Dasha, which is the basis of Dashen, and it means to bring forth life, which grows, flourishing and abundant.
Mm-hmm. Interesting letters, too.
Yeah, let's look at Dasha for a moment.
Well, even if you look at it just superficially, just right off the top of your head, you've got a D or a doorway, a delete, which is an end of the doorway, and then you have the second letter is going to be the teeth. Chin. My brain went dead there for a minute, and then the aleph. So, I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say that the doorway that leads you, or the doorway rather, that opens you up to nourishment and
nourishing words. The doorway of nourishing words.
Leading you to the Almighty, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's what it says. It's the doorway comprised of nourishing words, which lead you to the Almighty Shepherd.
And you find those in the Torah. So.
Of course. But you can't imagine. And by the way, dasha, and the basis of it, which is the verbal form, dasha, is there any difference in the way they're conveyed alphabetically in Hebrew?
I couldn't find anything different.
No, there isn't. No, there isn't. They're both the D, the SH, and the LF.
Mm-hmm.
So, written exactly the same way. And so this word, based upon the images that comprise it, is the doorway of nourishing words that lead to the Almighty Father and the Almighty Shepherd. Okay, well, that works for me. To bring forth life which grows, flourishing and abundant. And it's related to dashin, which is the provision of the choicest, most nourishing, richest, and most beautiful food to consume to facilitate vigorous growth, abundant prosperity, tremendous and health, total freedom, complete satisfaction, and a stalwart attitude. Stalwart is not a word that we use a lot in English.
No.
Stalwart. You know what stalwart means?
Go ahead and tell me about
it. Yeah, I know, because I cheated. I looked it up. And I knew that when you spoke of someone as stalwart, that they're standing firm, right?
Yeah.
But it's a person who is resolute in absolute confidence and unwavering.
Like unwavering. I like that.
Yeah. It describes you.
They have unwavering.
Describes his children.
In my notes, they have unwavering.
Yeah. It means to, you know, when you know who Yahweh is, you know that he is unwavering. His plan is his plan. His Torah is his Torah. His covenant is his covenant. There ain't a new one. There's no variations of it. There's no exceptions. He doesn't waver.
Yeah.
You know, he talked the talk. He walked the walk. You either accept it or you reject it. But you don't alter it. Unwavering, but absolute conviction, absolute confidence is what comes from knowing and understanding.
And even a little extra to the point, one of the, I don't know whether it's a concise Hebrew or Aramaic lexicon I looked in, but found that it also was... they were talking, it made the distinction of this is not grass in the pasture, this is a mature herb, so much more beneficial food to eat, you know, than that. So it's strengthening your position there just a minute. So everywhere you go, you find the same thing.
Yeah.
If you look, you find the same thing, yeah.
Didn't we ultimately discover in our food study that the foods are words, nourishing words?
Absolutely.
So, Kirk, now that we know that Hebrew poetry says the same thing, but from a different perspective. And we have a lyric set to melody of the beloved Dode. Yahweh is my shepherd, the observant one who guides, nurtures, tends to, and protects. I shall not be diminished. In an abode that is conducive to growing, to sprouting out and shooting forth, in a place that facilitates the choicest, most nourishing, richest, and most delightful words to consume that facilitate vigorous health, abundant prosperity, tremendous growth, and total freedom, as well as complete satisfaction and a stalwart attitude. He enables me to stretch out and recline, appropriately sheltered after exerting myself. But
I like that better than the English version.
Wow. Wow.
Beautiful.
I mean, that's the, you know, you've got one thing is I'm not going to be diminished, but it's not a static.
No.
This is what's going to happen instead.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be in a home that is conducive to growing, conducive to learning, conducive to being satisfied, to a place where I'm going to be able to stretch out and reach out. And then after I have exerted all of this energy and this voyage of discovery, I'm going to be able to come back to the comfort of home,
mm-hmm.
and rest and reflect on what I have seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's...
I'm signing up for that, man. I've already signed up for it.
Yeah, we've already signed up.
I've already signed up for it. But
looking forward to it.
What we're having here is a beautiful depiction of life in the seventh dimension.
Mm-hmm.
Life with Yahweh. And a picture of him having as much fun doing this as we're going to have.
Yeah.
And this marvelous idea of, you know, what it tells me is that he didn't create the universe in 6 days with the seventh day of rest, and didn't establish the model of 6 days of exertion followed by a day of rest and reflection in the Shabbat, and didn't create the seven steps to him, the six steps to him that lead to the seventh, camping out with him. He didn't create that as something for a temporary period of time, but instead as the integral plan that depicts the pace of eternity.
He knows how we work, doesn't he? I mean, he just knows this is the way.
Because this is how he works.
Yeah, because he works, yeah, of course.
This is exactly how he works, which is telling us that he wants us in eternity to enjoy the pace that he found most pleasing. To exert oneself for 6 days, and on the seventh, rest and reflect on what you've done.
Yeah. But if you were paying,
and we find God would do this. Doesn't he on the seventh day kneel down to the being that he created that was most like him and say, it's good?
Yeah, he looked at it, studied it, and enjoyed looking at it, enjoyed being part
right.
of it.
Right.
Engaging with it, yes. It's no different than anything. If you were building something and you liked a garden, I mean, after you've built your garden, let's say, and you planted it and it started to grow and flourish, and then you just sit back there and you have your glass of wine and you look at it and just enjoy the heck out of it, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, when you talk about eternity being liberated in time,
mm-hmm.
and you know the example of light where time can certainly exist and a moment can last for an eternity, or what is an eternity can flash by in a second. One of the problems of all of that is to be so liberated in time is to have no meaning to time. And almost to be out there without, you know, if there aren't some handrails along, there isn't some way of keeping upright, you know, maintaining the proper perspective, having something that that kind of orders your journey,
mm-hmm.
then it's really disorienting. You know, it's like being in an airplane and not being able to tell upside down from right side up.
Mm-hmm.
That's not as appealing to me as an eternity that is actually still has the flow of time.
Mm-hmm. You have to have some benchmarks along the way just to, for all of those reasons. You just really do. You really do.
Right. Yeah, I mean, because otherwise some of us might go off to do something and we'd be gone for so long that others would miss us.
Mm-hmm.
And yet what this does is it keeps us all together as a family, and yet we can independently do whatever we want to do, and we come back and rest and reflect and enjoy one another's company and share
and
as a family. He's depicting the very thing that he did in creating the universe, and that's the pattern that we're going to follow. So, the beginning is the end. It's all the same. That's the reason why there is no reason to change the Torah. That's why there's no reason for a New Testament.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a marvelous presentation of ideas. So, this is in a residence conducive to growing, to sprouting out, to shooting forth. He enables me to stretch out and then recline appropriately sheltered after exerting myself. This is Rabas.
Rabas.
Now, we're talking about stretching out and then reclining appropriately sheltered after exerting oneself. How does Rabas convey that idea?
Well, it sounds like the Shabbat just by analysis, but I mean he has in the word itself. I mean, it's mm-hmm. the observant person, you know, in the family home,
right?
And then the third character, we know that the Rosh is the first one, and the Bet is the family home.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have the family, and then the last one, of course, is a reclining individual. That's the.
I don't know if it's you breaking up or me breaking up, but I couldn't hear the last thing you said. Oh yeah, Kirk has hung up. So it is the reclining individual, and as the reclining individual, what we have is this realization that an observant individual who is part of the covenant family is going to be able to rest and reflect after this dashay, after this growing, after this spreading out, after this examination of the universe. Now, it's interesting here that we should look at the way the verb rabas was written. It is, he provides a stable for his flock from rabes. For me to sit down or lie down after reaching out following a long walk or journey, and we return to his home after this long walk or journey, to a dwelling place that's designed to shelter and rest those who have exerted themselves. Now, it was written in the Hifl stem. The Hifl stem reveals that the subject, who is Yahweh here, causes the object, who is Dod, to participate in the action, being sheltered and protected in his home. So it's Yahweh who is enabling us to be able to experience these conditions. While the imperfect conjugation tells us that this restful condition is going to continue forever, it's ongoing. All right? So he enables me to stretch out and recline appropriately sheltered after exerting myself. And then it's all, which is above the Almighty's waters, calm and composed, he leads me to the light, which would conclude the second statement. So I get the idea of abode. Yahweh is taking us to his home, and that home is being described, Kirk. And I get the idea of dashay, which is this home is conducive not only to growing, but to prosperity, to freedom, to satisfaction, to a stalwart attitude, to being able to go forth. And then I understand that he's describing that we'll return after exerting ourselves and rest and reflect on what we have seen and witnessed and done in Yahweh's home. And it says all of this is above the Almighty's waters.
Mm-hmm.
Al-Mayim. Why do you think it's written Al Mayim, above the Almighty's waters?
Well, you've got the M, of course. You always think about the set apart spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Protecting over mm-hmm. The person standing up. So the MH is the Mayim. So
So that MYM is Mayim. It's a dual concept always presented in a. And this as a singular, but it's a dual concept, and it has the mem and the hand of Yahweh mm-hmm. between the two mems, which are both depict water,
mm-hmm.
Which is the source of life and the universal solvent for cleansing, and Yahweh's action, his doing, his hand between those two mems.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't the set-apart spirit the hand of Yahweh?
Absolutely.
Isn't the set apart spirit the active part of Yahweh in our world, engaging, doing the work of Yahweh in our world?
Often referred to in the you know, it's the comforter. I'm going to send the comforter. That's the actual person that's there to watch over us, protect us.
She's the one that empowers us. She's the one that lifts us up. Mm-hmm. So we are the thing that's going to make our souls like Yahweh and able to experience things in the seventh dimension is we are going to be uplifted by the Almighty's spirit, the hand of Yahweh as the set-apart spirit. It's the set-apart spirit's influence on us that lifts us up to the seventh dimension that enables all of this.
Yeah. Well, you're never going to be separated from the spirit. I mean, that was the whole point, that to live eternally, you have to be attached to a spirit, and that's the one.
Right.
So in context, of course. I mean,
so above the Almighty's waters is all of the Yahweh's home and our ability to return there and to be in Yahweh's presence and to share with one another eternally and the power to do these voyages of discovery, that all of that is based upon the waters, the set-apart spirit. And it's used as waters here because it's Mem Yod Mem, the hand of Yahweh. Cleansing, purifying, and as a source of life. The empowerment, the benefits of the Spirit. But what follows is so interesting. It says, calm and composed, he leads me to the light. Isn't being led to the light now the poetry version of what is he talking about in the waters? So as we're trying to understand in an abode conducive to growing and to shooting forth, reaching out, exploring, he enables me to stretch out and then recline appropriately, sheltered after exerting myself above the Almighty's waters, that we would have another insight from a different perspective to that same thing. And it's calm and composed. He leads me to the light. Who is the light?
The light, of course, is Yahweh.
Yeah, and the set-apart spirit is that aspect of the light that caused Yahusha to be the diminished manifestation of Yahweh here in our world.
Mm-hmm. That light covers.
And yeah, exactly.
Of course.
Nahal is the Hebrew word here that says leads me to the light. It said he guides me toward the goal of enlightenment, of being unburdened with great care. He brings me to a place where I am revived and cared for with nourishing food and refreshing water after a long journey. You know, this, the English translation says he leads me to still waters.
Mm-hmm.
But Nahal is associated with Na'ir, which is the Almighty's light, and with Na'ar, which is the verbal form, which is the stream of radiant light where one's burdens are lightened.
Well,
flowing away.
When I looked it up, in his described as flowing waters, going like a river.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a movement thing, moving towards something. Also.
Yeah. Did you look up any of the related words? Because all the related words to Na'al speak of light, of enlightenment, of being unburdened.
Yeah. That would make sense. Absolutely. I did not, but that would totally make sense.
And it was used in the imperfect here, meaning that the leading continues and the light endures forever. It's in the peel stem, which means that that we are being led to the light by God on behalf of those who are being led, Dode, and as a result of the relationship between them.
Yes, it does. And it was also continuing inheritance. So it once again reinforcing the same idea over and over and over again. So
right.
So you can't.
That being led to this river of flowing light is what enables us to reach out and explore the universe, exert ourselves, and yet return to Yahweh's home to rest and reflect on what we have done. That's the corollary of it, or a view from a different perspective. And it's calm and composed, not still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we are going to exert ourselves and be energetic, and by the way, the stream here cannot be calm and composed because it's flowing. It's flowing rapidly. The stream of light is flowing rapidly. So it can't be that the stream is what's being talked about, and that it's still, when the Hebrew word that's used here means to flow rapidly.
No, but we can be still. We can rest and reflect. I mean,
right. We can be calm and composed. You know, if you're going to be that energetic, that powerful, you better be pretty calm and composed. You know, I'm a pilot, and when you're in an airplane, you have the power to navigate in all three dimensions, and you've got the power to go very fast. And when you're in that airplane, even though you're moving very quickly, you need to be calm and composed.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine now being able to fly around with the speed of light. And all the power that that Yahweh has to give, don't you think it's going to make some sense to be calm and composed?
I think, yeah, you got to be in slow motion while everything else is going on around you.
You betcha. Calm and composed. So this energy that we're exerting to go off and explore, and then when we return back and we want to share what we have experienced, being calm and composed in both situations is going to be very important, particularly understanding that the empowerment is the flowing, the rapid flowing of Yahweh's light.
Had you translated this before?
I don't remember it. No.
Okay, so you'll want to make a note on all this for everybody. I know I would want one.
I did it strictly because you wanted to talk about it relative to the shepherd role as it relates to the two titles that Yahweh uses, Father and Almighty God. And in Almighty God, he's always presented as Aleph Lamed with the shepherd's staff.
Yeah, there I go again.
So you were the one that directed our attention to it because of the way it began. And so I decided, you know, why not translate it and find out what God actually said in this, the most important of these psalms about eternity.
Hey, see you in the morning.